Radio Tatras International gets on your wavelength. www.rti.fm.
I'm recording.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's part two, and we've not even started doing the news apart from one story yet. Now, we have a startling news story here, which has been picked by Mr. Gander. I don't think it's got anything to do with the fact that he's named after a bird. But we have a story about seagulls in Bridlington that are stealing chips. Is that really a news story, Mark?
Well, I don't think that the stealing the chips is much of a story. I mean, hang on, Bridlington, for the people who aren't in England, Bridlington's a coastal resort up on the sort of north-east of England.
East Riding of Yorkshire.
Right, there we are.
See, for once I knew what I was talking about.
Goodness, you bailed me out there. And I mean, I think that, you know, seagulls are quite known for this, for sort of swooping down and, you know, taking biscuits out of people's hands and bread and this sort of thing. It's actually great fun. But what makes this very interesting is that the chip shop owner, of course, it's something very English. I don't know whether they've got chip shops in on the coast of Texas. Is there a coast in Texas? I don't think they've got them in Spain. Yeah, they'll have them in Spain.
For some reason,
oh yes, on the coast of Paris, we've definitely got French fries. Apparently, the customers were buying chips, and then they're walking away from his chip boutique, and suddenly finding that the seagulls then are sort of swooping down in the birds Hitchcock, nicking all the chips. But this particular chip salesperson, Justin Carpenter, they are chip off the old block there. For some reason or other, he felt duty bound to replace the chips. So what happened was that you come out with a nice big bag of chips, you're just about to eat, and the seagulls come along, help themselves to the chips. Then you go back into Justin Carpenter, you say, "The bloody birds have nicked my chips, can I have some more?" And Justin Carpenter would say, "Yes, of course, that sounds very reasonable, I have to compensate you with chips." And the news story here is that this seems this man may even going out of business because it's costing him so much money in replacing chips, he doesn't got any money for profit.
Do you think this story is true?
Well, it does sound amazing.
It does. I think it is, mate. And good on him. Good old Justin Carpenter for giving his chips away for free. But maybe that's why he's not making much money.
He's obviously a very decent man. But I've got a solution for Justin if he wants to listen. Okay, if he's listening,
this is going to be terrible, isn't it? This is going to get us taken off the air, isn't it?
No, not at all. I think this is exactly what he should do. I think what he ought to do is how much do you think he sells his bag of chips for?
£1.50.
£1.50. I think that's a pretty big bag of chips. Anyway,
that's the average price. I tell you what, we're going to do the price of chips in Britain later on. And is the average price. You can pay £2.10 for a bag of chips in Britain. That is ludicrous.
Well, I think you ought to add on an extra 10p for insurance. There we are. And I'm sure that he could do a deal
with it. Here's one for you, Mark. Here's one. It's not. We'll go back to this story in a second, but it just crossed my mind when you said that. I don't know where this happens elsewhere in the world, but I'm sure it does. But there are certain people in Britain who use what is called a prepayment card for their electric. And that is because they basically got themselves in trouble with the electricity boards, whoever they are, the electricity suppliers at some stage, by being late on the payments, on the bills, etc. So they were put on a prepayment meter.
Yeah.
Now, usually when you end up in trouble with your utility bills and things like that, it's because you're running out of money. You can't quite afford them, particularly at the price of things today.
Yeah.
So they put you on a prepayment meter, which means that you have electric when you have paid for it, not when the electricity people have supplied it to you. But do you know that you actually pay extra for that electric? Even though you're amongst the poorest people in the country, you have to pay more for your electric because you're poor. And something else has come up now, which I think is despicable. And actually, next week, if I get the chance, I'm going to name the people who are doing this. Shops in my area that supply electric to people who have electricity prepayment cards, who are paying more for the electric in the first place, are now charging 50p to put to actually service the card.
Yeah.
The shop is taking 50p on top of it. That is despicable.
Look, Lee, you know, you're dead right. This is despicable. And I don't know why. It certainly happens in the United Kingdom. I don't know if it happens in other countries and other jurisdictions. But it seems to me that when you're down and out here, then you become the cash cow and everybody is feeding off you. You know, this is worse than seagulls coming down and swooping down and taking your chips. They will take everything. They load on the charges. They load on the cost of the electricity. You know, as soon as they see that you're in difficulty, then you become the cash cow and they will just basically suck your udders dry. It is disgusting. Yes.
Suck your udders dry?
Yes.
That was just a fascinating simile. I've never heard that one before.
Well, it goes in with cash cow quite well.
I understand. Yes, actually, that was very poetic. I didn't catch on to that bit. Yeah, so basically, yeah, this poor chap in Bridlington, you're saying, should actually, though, despite what you just said, say he should load the price of his chips.
Well, I think he could sell, you know, I mean, I'm sure not every customer has this problem. And so, you know, he could probably do a deal with an insurance company where they're prepared to sort of, you know, do insurance for the chips for, say, half an hour after the purchase was made. It would be nice to learn for everybody. And, of course, it would save his business. I think it's a great idea. I'm sure the banks will be able to come on. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure eventually the insurance will be missold, by the way, because I'm sure eventually the banks and the insurers will do their usual thing and they'll find a way of corrupting the whole decent idea. But for the moment, it would work.
I think that's brilliant. Would it cover you, say, for your fish if you dropped it in the sea or something like that?
Well, I think that would be a premium because that would be an extra risk. But yes, why not? Yeah.
What about your mushy peas? What if they're hard?
Well, mushy peas, you mean guacamole, I hope.
Guacamole? That's a country.
Guacamole.
Yeah, anyway, and the top tip for the listeners, if you're in Bridlington or anywhere else in the world, and the seagull swoops down and nicks your chips, don't you dare kick it because they burst and you'd hate yourself afterwards.
What bursts? The seagulls?
Pigeons and seagulls, if you kick them. Never, ever kick a pigeon or a seagull. That is a disgusting thought, and I think that is terrible, Mark. You should be ashamed of yourself for thinking of it in the first
place. Just let me know, quite how do you happen to know about this particular phenomenon?
My daughter told me.
Oh, yes, of course, yes, all right. You are a rotten man.
I've got to do an Eric cough here. That's because I don't have a cough button. Are you ready? Shall we move on?
Yes.
Shall we actually move on now and do something else?
Yes.
What about this, Mark? I think this is terrible because, you know, we have a lot of time and a lot of affinity with our troops, particularly at the moment, because they're being sent all over the world to various wars, which some people say we can't win, others say we can. I personally have my own views on what we can do. But one of the most dangerous places for British troops to be, surely, is Libya at the moment.
Mm.
And they're being paid. Are they going to be paid? Can you believe this? They're going to be paying a danger allowance of £29 a day.
Fantastic. I think it's just far too much, £29.
No, you're just being reactionary, aren't you? I wonder how much. Yeah, it's approximately about half of what you get for a week on the dole, isn't it? So they're not doing too bad then, are they?
£29 a day. I mean, I have to say that these kind of things are really embarrassing. You know, when you look around, I mean, I know that these guys have got a job to do and they go in there
as part of their job and so forth. Right.
But, you know, really, I think to start offering them £29 a day, is it really going to compensate them for the sort of, you know, danger?
The danger, yeah. What's it based on?
I think it's quite insulting.
I do as well. I think it's absolutely disgusting. I think it is absolutely shameful that the British government, under the circumstances of all the other things that are going on. Yeah. And what should we be in Libya? That's the first question. And if we should be in Libya, do you remember we said that we would not put our feet on the Libyan soil?
Well, have we actually got British troops on the ground in Libya?
I think we've got them everywhere, haven't we, in reality? Whether we're talking about it or not, we have troops on the ground everywhere.
Yeah, you could be right there.
And if they're not on the ground, why are they getting £29 a day for being in danger?
Yeah, well, maybe they're getting ready to go in the ground. But yes, absolutely. £29 does seem pretty paltry. Let me say that I don't think that the wage of the average squaddy is particularly good anyway. I mean, I've always found it to be quite amazing is that, you know, they pay you money and then they take away sort of things like meal allowances, accommodation allowances, and all this sort of thing, you know.
And you have to buy part of your own kit as well.
It's all bean counting, and I think it really is shocking.
There is a point here that the government's made, and I think this just speaks for itself, and I'll just read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will be paid an extra £29.02 a day, tax-free. Yeah. And guess what? They're going to backdate it to when military action was authorised on March the 18th.
Oh, dear me. What a lot of money.
Well, it is. You'd probably get a grand, wouldn't you?
Well, listen, I think it's all rather, you know, there's a lack of balance here, because I'm also happen to be, and this is not something that you've mentioned yet, but yeah. I'm noticing a piece that's just been put up on the BBC website today about senior Whitehall civil servants.
Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
Now, these characters, the senior Whitehall civil servants, who apparently have made a particular contribution, are about to get bonuses of up to £20,000. That's just this year. Okay. Mm. It's not £20,000 for the whole of their lives. They're up to get up to £20,000 for the whole of this year, simply because they've made an exceptional contribution. Well, I just don't understand what's going on here. I mean, you know, exceptional contribution. These people are just doing their job, and some of them are doing their job well. So why do you get extra money for simply doing what you're meant to be paid for anyway? It, you know, it really seems amazing. And when, on the other hand, I hear that these guys who are really in harm's way, and, you know, some of them, unfortunately, will be brought back in boxes, and they're getting £29 a day, and these civil servants who are probably leading a very comfortable life, who've just simply done a decent job in getting as much as £20,000, something doesn't quite stack up.
Well, that's it, yeah, because civil servants, and I'm not trying to be incendiary here or cause an argument, but civil servants are literally the grey men, aren't they? They are the faceless wonders of society. And if you are happy doing that kind of civil servant's job, then you have to be a person of greyness and of no great chutzpah and excitement and drama and of giving. They are there to do the bidding of people in power. Why are they worth so much more money? Well, the political equivalent. The people who actually go out and lay down their lives.
Mm. Yeah. I have to say that I would want to keep my head down as well if I was getting £20,000 bonus in this time of economic crisis. I wouldn't want to talk about it with too many people.
Well, let's move on then. What about I've headlined this, right? And I hold. I make no apologies for it. Why the UK is the idiot of Europe. I think it's amazing as well. Britain could be forced to pay out millions of pounds a year in pensions to foreigners who've never worked here, thanks to the European urine.
The European urine. Because they're taking the urine, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, what do you think to that, Mark?
Well, you know, I suppose it's going to rile a lot of people, and the kind of people it's going to rile particularly are the kind of people who say, well, you know, when I phone my bank, I don't want to talk to an Asian call centre and so forth. And I think there's a kind of sort of jingoism about it that appeals to people. But I think it's very unfortunate. And at the end of the day, you know, I do think that, you know, if these are the rules and if people come over here and if they're, you know, you know, I don't think that we can just start sort of changing things. And it may be that the rules are unpalatable, but I certainly don't want to be one sort of start saying, well, you know, all these foreigners, blah-de-blah, you know, they shouldn't, we Brits. I find that kind of attitude and that kind of sort of, you know, shouting very, you know, very dangerous, very tabloid.
Oh, thank you. Are you having a little dig at me then, dear?
Not at all, my dog.
In all honesty, I agree with you 100% that actually, yeah, the problem when I wrote that headline, and I thought about it quite seriously, and even the use of the word foreigners, right?
Yes.
That all of a sudden starts to brand you as a racist. And I'm not a racist. I've never been a racist in any way, shape or form. But I actually believe, this is what happened, right? The fact that Britain could end up having to pay out all this money to foreign pensioners, it came to light after a pensioner who arrived in Britain as an asylum seeker from Latvia 11 years ago, and she's never, ever worked here. She took the government to court for refusing to top up her homeland state pension, that's the pension from Latvia, of £50 a week, to get it up to the rate of £130 a week in Britain. I can't make sense of that. No, I understand what you're saying. It's to do with the rules. The rules are there to be followed. And actually, the great wide expanse of Europe without any racism and anything like that is right. But you have to take it into consideration when Britain is putting up the retirement age for people by 5 years.
I completely agree. Listen, I completely agree with you, okay? But the trouble is that when I see this kind of story, I know that it panders to the extreme right of British society. Yeah. And because it panders to them and because it encourages them, I have to take the opposite view. Even if I find that, you know, even if I find that I'm jealous or I begrudge the money being paid over or what have you, I think that there are so many more important principles that even if it costs us money, I think that those principles need to be stood up for. The only other thing that occurs to me is, you know, I mean, I don't know much about this story, but she came over here as an asylum seeker 11 years ago. Is she still an asylum seeker? Has she actually been given permission to work? It would be interesting to know a bit more about it, because I know that some people are allowed to come over here and have got very limited work rights or even so it would be interesting to know the whole story. But as I say, as far as I'm concerned, if this is a good story for the extreme right wing, you know, the British National Parties and so forth, then as far as I'm concerned, I don't have a problem with the story then, because I think that we need to make a stand against that kind
of thing. I have to say that while you're saying that this is appealing to the right wing, right? And it was a story that appeared in the Daily Express.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm sure it is, you know, but it is still a kind of sort of rabble-rousing, you know. Of course it is,
yeah. But I still think it's a story that needs pointing out to people. You can't say, as a matter of appearing to be jingoistic or appearing to be racist in any way or anything, that all of a sudden, this is part of what's happened to this nanny state society that we've got, that actually most people, including me, because like I said right at the beginning, I was very... agonized over writing the headline and of putting this story in, because of the way this society is now, we are worried about discussing these kind of issues, and we shouldn't be. It is something that's there. This is in the public arena, and we should be able to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, I think if anything's going to be done about this kind of thing, then I think that the rules have to be changed on a European level so that everybody's agreed and everything's transparent. But I'm afraid that, you know, running this in the Express, where I know exactly, I'm sorry to say, the kind of sentiment that it's going to appeal to, I find the whole thing, you know, a bit unnecessary. But you're quite right. We need to know the story, unnecessary about it.
The thing is also, if you are you there, Mike? Mark?
Yeah.
You make very strange noises. It's like,
oh, sorry, I was shuffling.
Anyway, yeah. The other problem is, you see, also, nobody seems to actually be able to accept at the moment that Britain is on its uppers. We are in a situation where we are really desperate to... Yeah. We need help. We need financial help.
Yeah.
And at the moment, if you think... I've just had a breaking news item. We've got another breaking news item. That's incredible. Right. We'll go on to those about before. Yeah. Anyway, young Brits, right? The debt level that young Brits are now being forced into is phenomenal. If you think... Is that you, Mr. Mark?
Sorry about that. It's a telephone. Beg your pardon.
I thought you were just warbling for me after you're underwater. So the young people in Britain today who can't afford houses are finding it hell to actually get a job are actually now having to live on credit cards.
Well, yes. I mean, once again, we've got this whole business, the whole economic crisis. And once again, you know, who are the victims of this? It's the poorer people, it's the young people and so forth. And what they're doing is they're racking up debt. Of course, I've got a telephone coming through again. this is great news, of course, isn't it, for the banking industry? Because it simply means that the more debt there is and the poorer people are, then the more charges they're going to be levied against and the more homes they're going to be repossessed. And generally speaking, it's going to be a nice little money earner, you know. Once again, you know, there's just a complete lack of balance. We've just had a look at the story about pensioners who are apparently arriving in Britain and drawing a full pension, you know, and people are all up in arms. I wonder how many people who read the Daily Express article were also up in arms, for instance, about having top civil servants getting £20,000 bonus simply for doing a decent job. You know, I think there's a lack of balance I keep saying that a lot in this, but I think that that's what there is. And
there is a lack of balance, but if you think, if you come out of university, which, you know, in all honesty, I don't see any reason at all why every young person in Britain has to actually have the opportunity to go to university now. It's, you know, you're going to university used to be a thing that you worked hard to do. Basically, what you do now is actually turn up to school, and one way or the other, you end up with enough qualifications to take you to university. But in the process, and I think this, honestly, I really believe this is one of the reasons for that, is because now it was this week, wasn't it, where it was decided that all universities and colleges, etc., could start to charge the maximum tuition fees.
Well, it is so amazing, isn't it? Up to £9,000. I have to say, I mean, I got my education in the days when it was paid for, and then later on, actually, my intellectual property degree, master's, was paid for by my employers at the time.
I don't know
how on earth these people can get through. And I think that, you know, these kind of stories about young people falling into debt, this is just the thin end of the wedge. Look out for very, very serious debt problems.
How's that going to affect us in the future? Say a kid comes out of university with, debts of living expenses and tuition fees and everything else of, say, 40 grand, which is quite feasible now, isn't it?
It
used to be about 18 grand, now it's going to be 40, 50 grand even. Yeah. And then they've had to be living on credit cards.
Yeah.
So their debts maybe could be £60,000 when they start to look at getting married and settling down and having a family. How are they going to get a mortgage?
Well, I tell you what, I think that the only thing these people ought to do is to consider bankruptcy at an early stage. And I think that's where it's going. I mean, their credit cards will eventually be pulled. They won't be able to repay their debts. They're going to be visited with charges all over the place. They're going to have bailiffs all over the place. Their credit reputation is going to be completely, stuffed in by the credit reference agencies. And I think that a huge number of people are looking at a very, very grim time. At the end of the day, it seems to me that there's going to be a sort of a new path. There's going to be sort of, you know, borrow money, education, get a job, fail to repay your debts, and eventually into bankruptcy, and then a new start.
You think that's the way it'll go? Because I must admit, we can't ever do a show together like this again, because we agree 100% with each other all the time. Yeah, how damaging is that for our society?
Well, of course, it's massively damaging. You know, you have just a huge amount of unpaid bills. I mean, it's not exactly the thing that's going to let the high street recover. It's not the kind of thing that's going to let the mortgage market recover. And of course, you could put up the cost of borrowing, because it's going to get more and more difficult and more expensive to borrow money, because the lenders are going to realize that their money is so much more at risk. I really don't know. Gloom. I'm so pleased that I did my education when I did, and I'm very frightened about my own children.
So actually, do you think this is feasible? You tell me, all right, I am tabloid. I would say that this is yet another instance of the bankers destroying our society.
Well, it is. And what's amazing is that they're hardly getting a mention nowadays about the problems they've caused. I mean, they have completely escaped. They completely escaped. And I can tell you that, for instance, if it had been in China, I can imagine that during the height of the economic crisis, when people had realized in China how reckless these people are, I could imagine that they would be on trial and it would be a bullet in the back of the head. And I tell you, that's the kind of action that is needed to sober up the banking industry and to make them take complete responsibility.
What? Shoot them in the back of the head?
I think that's what would have happened.
I think that's a bit dramatic.
It's what would have happened in China. Okay, I'm not saying that I favour the death sentence. I'm not necessarily saying that that's quite what should happen
Europe. Don't kill them, just wing them.
just shoot Nero. But I'm quite sure that for this kind of thing, for that kind of recklessness, for that kind of abuse of the financial system, for that kind of abuse to sort of the economic well-being of society, I can imagine that in China, that's what they would do. And it would certainly send a message around which would not be mistaken.
I think it's a very fair point. The last one on this sort of doom and gloom thing that we're doing is holidaymakers as well. Holidaymakers. You know, the one thing that we had as a British society was the right to a holiday. You know, not even the right to one, but we could have a holiday if we wanted, if we could afford it. And now, because we are that kind of society that desires to get away from things, and believe me, in Britain there's so much to get away from, that we're going into massive debt for that. And your average price of a holiday isn't a couple of hundred quid anymore in Britain. You're talking an average family holiday would probably cost you between £1,000 and £2,000.
But what is there to get away from Britain? I mean, if you were in France, I can tell you there's a lot to get away from. But in Britain, I'd love to go to Britain.
Well, I was
looking for sponsorship.
About that.
Yeah. What?
What, you would like to come back to Britain?
Oh, yes, please.
Why?
Because if you lived in France, you'd know. The judge, because you've hardly been there. The judge said to me that if I keep my nose clean, it may not be too much longer. I think I come up for a parole hearing in a couple of years.
I'll swap with you. Yeah, you come and stay over here, and I'll go and stay in Paris for a bit. I thought
Dominique Strauss-Kahn was so lucky being confined to America. How wonderful.
I love Paris. I think Paris is so romantic, honestly. And it's just beautiful. And the French people are so nice. And I love onion soup. Yeah.
Where have you been?
Where have I been? I've been here talking to you for the last hour.
What's the longest you've ever spent in Paris at one go?
I've got to be honest. This is going to bring us right down again. It was when Diana got killed in Paris. Paris, that place, really, isn't it? Yeah.
How long were you here for? A week?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. There we are.
Yeah. I was staying at quite posh hotels and stuff, and it was all expenses paid and stuff. But yeah, no, I love Paris. I like to walk the streets of Paris at night. I like to, there's by the side of the Seine, I can't remember what it's called now, but there's this beautiful, beautiful walk where there's a fabulous big, massive greenhouse. You know these big, massive greenhouses you have over there? And it's all, see what it is?
Like in Kew Gardens.
Yeah, like in Kew Gardens. Yeah. And it was just overgrown. The windows were gone. And then they would walk down another street and they'd remove the interiors of all the houses. So you just had the facades of these fabulous old Parisian mansions and everything. And then I went to the Theatre of the Macabre. I went down the Champs-Élysées. I went to everything, the Georges Pompidou Centre. We don't have things like that in Britain. All we have is HGVs and
I think we've got all of that. Anyway, listen, you were only here for 3 years. Try 5 years. Now, the Germans were here for 5 years. They were bloody pleased to go, I can tell you. Never again. So, maybe I'm being very politically incorrect here, but I can be very nasty about Paris.
Politically incorrect, yes. I think you should be ashamed of yourself, yeah. Honestly, I think you should apologise.
To who?
Listen, we're nearly over now. We've nearly done it. Can you believe that that is really just about the end of it? Now, let's finish on...
Yes.
Wait for it. When Spam was good for you. They're about to build a £1,400 Spam sandwich in somewhere in Germany, I think.
In Germany?
Is it in Germany?
I don't know.
No, Nebraska. No, it's in Nebraska. That's near Germany, isn't it? America's just next door to Germany, isn't it?
Well, it depends which way around you go. But,
yeah, exactly. If you're going backwards, then you find that you're facing America. I agree with you. Yeah, well, they're building this Spam sandwich, and it's absolutely massive. And do you know what Spam was all about?
Yes, it was spiced pork and ham.
Spiced pork and ham, that's it. We've been trying, ladies and gentlemen, for a week to remember that. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. It is time to say goodbye. Mr. Eric with his man boobs and his man flu will be back next week. Mark will still be in the poo city at the centre of Europe. And I'll still be very nice and charming here. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
The Station of the Stars. RTI.